and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And once again, we are joined by our friend of the show, David from the Lorehounds. David, how are you doing?
Great. Great to be here on day two, as it were, minute two for the week. We had fun on the last minute, and we got a lot to talk about this minute.
Oh, yes, yeah. We do.
A lot of notes.
So I think we should just go ahead and pick up directly where we left off, because the movie was so gracious in cutting us off halfway through a word of a sentence. So to kind of recap where we left off yesterday, Chani asks Paul who taught him to fight like that, and Paul completely, you know, kills the mood of the party by saying, "My old masters, they were close friends. They were massacred alongside my father. You've been fighting the Harkonnens for decades, but my family's been fighting them for centuries. I know everything about them, their habits, their ways of thinking. You know everything about the desert. You harness the very power of it. We can stop them together." So,
it's a lot
Paul there. Paul has a little more, but this is the gist of what David was getting towards at the end of our last episode, where we talked a little bit about how Paul was seeking this higher authority here, saying, "Well, my family's been fighting them for hundreds of years."
Yeah, 15-year-old kid waving his, "My family."
Yeah.
"Wait till my dad hears about this." Well, your dad's dead, so. Paul is still seeking what his father sought, desert power. And, you know, Paul recognizes that he doesn't know shit about fighting in the desert, but ultimately, he wants to, as we've talked about in earlier minutes of the Dune Minute, I believe it was maybe minute 17 or so, when Paul, I'm probably wrong on that, it's either like 17 or 22 when Paul's talking to Jessica, saying that he needs to use the Fremen to get his way to the Emperor by disrupting spice production. So this is his more chill way of kind of approaching that, by suggesting that, you know, he knows how to fight the Harkonnens, but the Fremen know how to fight in the desert. So they should work together to bury the Harkonnens in the sand where they belong.
Yeah.
And it calls back then to his father talking about desert power. And he actually, mm-hmm. and Paul uses the line desert power here. So it's a nice through line connector, you know, connecting the points. And I think desert power gets a lot of use in the books, if I don't remember.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, it's like one of those, like, wine dark sea in Odysseus, you know, where Homer just keeps repeating the line over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Desert power, I think, gets repeated quite a lot. But it's an important point, I think, in the movies. And we talked last episode about how Denis is constructing certain things and the medium and the message, the changes that he has to do. And I thought that this was a particularly effective use of coming around for Paul now having lost his father, but now found his people and his calling. He can call back, or he can rely on, and he can pull forward some of what his father was always trying to tell him. Yeah. And I don't know. I just think of that line from the 84 movie, where he's like, you know, "The father, the sleeper has awakened," right? You know, and Villeneuve plays with that a little bit in Dune 1, where he says, you know, you can, whatever you're going to be, you're going to be, you're still my son.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's like, "No, really, boy, you gotta step the fuck up. you gotta become a leader."
And this is, like, I believe the first of a few callbacks to the first movie that we're going to get this week. There are a number of just echoes, I'll call them, that we're going to see in the next, in this minute and the next couple. So I love that stuff, man. I just, when you're able to make that through line and it's a good callback. So I love a good callback.
And I was curious too about the history of the Harkonnen Atreides feud. And I asked Omnius if it could help me a little bit and do a quick search. And I guess there's not that much feud, you know, the feud isn't built in that deeply in the books, except for this line about the poison in Baron Harkonnen deep in his mind is the knowledge that an Atreides had in Harkonnen banished for cowardice after the Battle of Corrin.
Yeah, that's about
it. If as long as Omnius isn't steering me wrong there, that is the, you know, that's all we get. But I think this is something that's interesting that's coming up in Andor in season two now, is Gilroy is leaving a lot of negative space in the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he's doing that intentionally to mess with our expectations, because we would expect that a particular character or some particular event that we didn't see on screen would get mentioned. And so it messes with our sense of expectation, which is good because then it highlights it for us, like we're actually generating as opposed to just being spoon-fed it.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes what is not said is as important as what is said. And so what Paul is not saying here is, we have a blood feud going way back and I'm going to use you guys to like fuck up my enemies.
Yeah.
And so he's not saying that, but it, but we as omniscient, you know, not omniscient, what are we, the whatever the observers are, mm-hmm. right? We, if, especially if we're Dune fans, we understand what's happening here and what Paul is not saying to them while he is saying something else very specific to them.
Right. Well, and he's doing it in a way that he's appealing to their hopes, because last sentence is here is, bury them in the sand where they belong so that this planet can be yours once more.
Go ahead. Sorry.
So he's really leaning into like the whole, look, I'm not here to take over your planet. I'm not here to, you know, be your leader. I just want to get rid of these guys. And if it just so happens that Arrakis becomes solely the Fremen's again, well, I guess that's good for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting too, because I skipped over that particular part of it, but then that opens up the whole story around what does Arrakis look like as a green paradise, and it brings that forward, which I've always thought interestingly, because the Fremen are such good fighters because of the harshness of the planet, but if you make it a green paradise, you're not going to have that fighting prowess anymore, because you're not going to be as trained up as you are right now.
And I mean, that's a big theme when you get into the later books. I can't remember exactly which one, but I mean that exactly that happens. They make the planet green, and then they lose their fighting sense. And I think the term they use is like water fat. For the Fremen. So that's, you know, that's part of the fear that a lot of the older Fremen have once the terraforming starts to happen.
Right.
And I have no doubt that what Paul is saying here is, you know, there is some level of earnestness in what he's saying, but I can't help but think this is a manipulative behavior that I think he learned from his mom. this feels like, you know, textbook Bene Gesserit stuff. Take what they want, use it for yourself, you know, and just use their passions and their desires to further your agenda.
And he hasn't even awoken yet. He's not even in the time nexus yet to see what is in the movies, right? He's not seen in the books. He's already had those first prescient moments in his understanding how his sight works. Here, he doesn't have that yet.
Right.
And so it's interesting how the prescience overlays the missionaria protectiva, which overlays the, hey, I'm a Duke's son and I need to get revenge on my enemies.
Right.
And how Herbert stacks all of those, and then how Villeneuve is reinterpreting it. I don't have any problem with any of all of that's going on here.
The way that it's shown in the movie certainly makes it more digestible for a movie-going audience. Right? So I understand it from that perspective. We don't lose any of the story, I feel like. We lose certain aspects, but it's not enough to make it a brand new story, if that makes sense.
Right.
I think one of the things that Zach and I kind of came to an agreement on, and I don't know if this episode has come out yet, because surprise, we record these well in advance, but, I think our ultimate feeling on this is as long as the canon within the movie makes sense to the movie itself, and mm-hmm. it's still like ultimately respectful and doesn't just like completely throw out core themes and everything, there's no issue that we have with it.
So. Right. Yeah, no, I think Villeneuve is respectful in a lot of ways. So yeah. I do have beef, but it's with different characters. So, but it's fine. He's the thing that actually makes me respect him with, not to get too far off our minute here, but where he has made decisions that I object with, I've actually heard him in interviews going, yeah, I'm making my interpretation of this. Mm-hmm. I made a call and I'm like, oh, good. Like, he's not trying to gloss it over. He is standing on his foot as I've interpreted it this way. This is my vision of it, whether you like it or not. And so I respect the fact that he is aware of his point of view and his bias in his filmmaking.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to own up to it. If you're going to change it, then change it. That's fine. But just own
exactly.
up to it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And the term that I wanted to add on to what John was saying was like internally consistent. If you're not going to be mm-hmm. consistent with the source material, at least be internally consistent with yourself.
That's a really good, another aspect to add into the shippy test kind of question is fine. You made the change. Is it? Yeah. I like that. I like that. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, at this point, Paul is asked to buy Stilgar. Well, what would you have us do? Stilgar at this point is definitely looking to Paul for leadership. And Paul just says, turns it right back on him. And well, what would you do? Because Paul is a 15-year-old kid. and if he wants to, keep these Fremen on board with them, it seems like he would want to, kind of go along with their plan and then just make his plans kind of fit in the space. And Stilgar is just like, I would strike even farther north. And then Paul's just like, yes, let's go farther north. and then Shishkali, being the voice of reason that she is like, well, hold on. The further north you go, the more likely it is you die. And then Paul, with what he has learned at, with Fremen culture at this point, is like, yeah, well, if I die, then someone's going to replace me. And, we'll just keep on going and keep going further until all Fremen are free. Mm-hmm. Once again, really leaning into the whole, I'm doing this for you. I'm not doing this for me. Mm-hmm. If I just happen to get something out of it, great, kind of thing.
There's an interesting thing here too, which is that everyone in the room can hear Paul's sincerity and authenticity in what he's saying. But then Stilgar kind of calls him out a little bit and Paul claps back in a way that makes sense for a... in a group of Fedaiken, you would break the guy's back. Well, I would break the back and cut off his head, right? He's pushing Stilgar at the same time. So he's playing a little game where he's like, I don't know what I would do, but whatever you do, I would do it twice as much as you would do, which is kind of a taunt and a response, right? Yeah, you're bad, I'm badder. So you're building it up. And I think it works ultimately to Paul's advantage here. But then, as you say, with Shishkali, great foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. Because she said, you're going to die. And he's like, I might. And you might die too. And we know that she ultimately is a martyr.
Yes.
At this point, Paul's response, I guess, is enough for her to want to promote him as Fedaiken. And then we get a random, other Fremen in the tent who seconds it by saying, he needs names, Stilgar.
Mm-hmm. Hovaji, Hovaji! One of my favorite Bardem lines ever. Hovaji! He does!
Yeah. And once again, we're left on the editing bay mid-sentence. He does. I see strength in our minute cuts right there.
Right. I wanted to kick back really quick into this whole question of the Chukbosa, and I had to double check. They don't speak Chukbosa in the books. So this is a variance. Zach, I don't know if you had this in your notes. They have their own Fremen language that is influenced by Chukbosa and has some words and phrases. But in the movie, he just has them speak Chukbosa, which then makes it easy for Paul and Jessica to, you know, connect their train cars to them because it's the Atreides battle language. So the Atreides use Chukbosa more fully, but they, but you know, for their secret language. So it makes PB&J fit into their culture a lot faster. But yeah, it is a deviation.
A little bit. I think it is explicitly said that, like, so when they first meet at the Cave of Ridges, which is what the end of the last movie, that part in the book, we get the language kind of spelled out phonetically. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, to the reader, it's just gibberish. And it goes so far as to explicitly say that, you know, Paul doesn't understand what's being said, but Jessica, because she's had training, knows that it is the Fremen language. And I believe that's where we get the name. Is it Chukbosa?
Chukbosa.
Tomato, tomato. Yeah. The internet can come at me. It's fine. I get added at all the time about my speaking styles or pronunciations.
I will be the last person to call anyone out on mispronouncing things. I do it daily.
Very first line in our first episode ever, you mispronounce inaugural.
I still can't say it. It's fine.
Will Harkonnen versus Harkonnen, right? That was a big one. I was like, oh wait, I was going with Lynch and going, you know, the Harkonnen.
Yeah, that one took a little bit for me to adjust, and I think John, we still have beef over Rabban Rabban.
Right, it's Rabban, right.
Rabban. So, yes, I mean, in the time that Paul has, they met in the cave to now, or in the Cave of Ridges to now, he's learned a whole heck of a lot of Chukbosa. He picks up on this language really quickly. It's not explicitly said. If movie Paul knew the language before they got to Arrakis, like maybe that was part of his podcast that he was listening to on the ship coming over. But you know, who knows? But he's picking
that
up.
That is my headcanon, that it's because of their battle language.
Yeah,
that he learned it when with Gurney and Duncan and all those guys.
In Denis's interpretation, Atreides' battle language is sign language. It's not spoken.
That's a very good point. We're never told that there's a spoken battle language. That's correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're right. So not to be the first guy on social media to call you out on that one, but if we're talking about consistencies throughout the movie and how the movie addresses certain parts of canon, like Atreides' battle language is a form of sign language and it's used in part one very extensively.
Mm-hmm.
Not only when Jessica is meeting Shadout Mapes for the first time, but also obviously when Paul and Jessica are bound and gagged in the Harkonnen Ornithopter as well. So there's definitely like a, hey, this is definitively how Atreides' battle language works over there. So
yeah. So this is, I guess, one area where Vanilluv is doing what he has to do on the movie. And to me, it doesn't degrade anything at all about it. It is a very quick connection for PB&J to get into with the Fremen, that he's able to speak so eloquently and passionately about what, we're going to make this place a place for the Fremen. Right. And they're all like, well, and he slips perfectly. He just goes from what's their native language? Gaelic? No, not Gaelic, not Gaelic, Irish, but,
I made Galak. That same mistake when we first talked about it.
Yeah.
I said Gaelic instead of Galak.
Gaelic, right. So he slips from that language into the Fremen language seamlessly, and everybody's enraptured. And I don't wonder if, you know, he's not explicitly using the voice here, but the voice in the original intent is a psychological tool. And so you have to learn mannerisms. And I think you would have to, I would think that you would have to match your, what you're saying to the magic space, you know, words, you know, to actually get the effect. That there's an interplay between what words and order, the order of the words and the intonation with whatever the psychological manipulation. So he's the heir of a ruler. So he's going to be around court. He's going to understand the art of rhetoric. He's going to understand the ability to think and speak in impassioned ways. And so I think this is part of his adulthood emerging here, is he's able to speak from the heart and become a leader and to manipulate people. No, it's not manipulation. He's saying, this is what I want. Do you want the same thing? Then great, we can make an alliance and go forward. Yeah. But he's doing it with that sort of pathos. And then with I can't do it. You guys are killing me.
Shishkali,
being the one who proposes that he needs to be a Fadaikin. I can do Fadaikin. it mirrors the book, which is Shishkali gives the maker's hooks.
Yeah.
And so there's still that active participation of that character being part of an active part of Paul's journey forward. And then it makes her death hit harder.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I think the only thing that I want to bring up from the books that we haven't already covered anyways, is that kind of placement in the books, because this is really a big departure in the movies, or from the book to the movie. And it's done well. I understand why they made this change, but the placement of the naming ceremony, which we're about to get into in tomorrow's minute, that happens like directly after Paul kills Jameis in the books. There's no time wasted. Jameis goes down. Jessica looks at Paul and goes, "How's it feel to be a killer?" And then someone in the background says, "He needs a name still." So it's like there's no time wasted in getting Paul his names. But here in the movie, there's a fair amount of time in between what happened with Jameis and where we are right now.
Well, and we have the Harvester battle, which is Paul's blooding in a way, and acceptance into the warrior culture. And to be able to have the agreement of the community, even though they're a leader-driven society, a lot is by consensus. And I don't know that Still would have agreed to it if there had not been consensus and voices raised that he deserves to be one of us.
I would say more the opposite, where Stilgar would almost be more enticed to want to get Paul in because of how fanatical he is. But
that's a good point too.
But he would be worried about not having the buy-in of the others. Whereas in this case, Shishkali and then another random Fremen are like, "Yeah, no, he actually needs names."
Yeah.
So at that point, that gives Stilgar the permission that he doesn't explicitly say that he needs, but you know, it gives him the permission that he needs to then say, "All right, let's make you Fadaikin."
By popular accord, it seems like everybody wants this, so let's go.
You have the buy-in of the group, which means that they're not only going to hate you, but not going to hate me as well.
Hovaji!
All right, cool. Well, take us away, John, and we will be back tomorrow.
Yes, of course. We are online on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. David is available in many places. I know the Lorehounds are pretty active all over the internet. So, David, where can people find you once more, please?
There's a Dune joke in there about the one who can be many places, but I am not. I am not that one. You can find us, the Lorehounds, on Blue Sky at the Lorehounds. We also have a community Discord. You can find us on in your podcast application of choice. And I don't know if you guys will put any links, but we can always throw a link in somewhere to our link tree, which has all of our main links and then links to all of the affiliate podcasts that we sponsor as well.
Oh, absolutely. We will definitely include that in the show notes.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
All right, cool. Well, let's meet back up tomorrow and talk a little bit more about getting some names.
Yeah, it's time.
All right, cool. We'll see y'all then.